Welcome everyone to What the Force, and welcome to a new episode of Clone Wars Special Report, covering episode 10 of Clone Wars Season 7, The Phantom Apprentice. And with me today is Kyle Gould.
Hey, a podcast, hey! Looking good.
Nubian, eh? That's very good.
What? Podcast tricks don't work on Toydarians.
And Robin, who's joining us again because she watched this episode too.
Yay!
How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah. All right. Generally speaking, what did we think of The Phantom Apprentice?
It feels like a full circle episode.
What do you mean by that?
I have written in my notes, The Phantom Apprentice, The Phantom Menace, question mark?
Yes. Yes.
They rhyme. Yay.
Well, they are paralleled, right? Yes.
Feels like a... Oh, hey. Yeah.
Kyle, what did you think?
Yes, this was a very good episode, but it's the, you know, the middle chapter of a four-act play, and as a result, I don't feel like much gets resolved except for a revelation of motivations.
It's very much the Empire Strikes Back / The Last Jedi, where they just are confronted with their emotions.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here, especially from an over-arc perspective that I'm interested to hear your thoughts on.
Mm. I had a question for you because I have an answer in my mind. Who is the Phantom Apprentice?
A dead apprentice.
I'm almost positive that the Phantom Apprentice is the character not in this episode.
That they talk about the whole episode.
Yeah, he's just a phantom.
Yeah.
He's not here.
He's not here right now.
Everybody wants him.
Anakin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yay. I got it
because
right.
It's something that's brought up, you know, kind of throughout the whole course of the episode that Anakin has been groomed for the position of being Lord Darth Sidious's new apprentice.
Groomed for his role as my master's new apprentice.
I thought that was an interesting line because he literally says, my master.
Yeah.
He has not managed to cut that cord in his own mind. The relationship still lingers long after he's been cast by the wayside.
So Maul ruminates.
Like a Roomba.
Yes. He is. There's this great Freddie Prinze Jr. Rant where he talks about Maul being Sisyphus, like constantly trying to roll the rock up the hill and it falling back down and him failing at being able to roll the rock up the hill. And but continuously tries, right? And he's continuously trying to, you know, find Kenobi, and he's continuously trying to undermine Sidious and survive Sidious, and but yet also he's kind of been programmed from birth as well, much like Ben Solo. There's a lot of complexity in the character of Maul.
Yep.
All right. We start off exactly where we left off. The intro was different even from the last one. We had no intro to the overall episode recap. It started out with the red Clone Wars logo again.
The Lucasfilm time the Star Wars faded in.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's new.
It was completely different from the last episode too. And it also had, you know, just part two. No fortune cookie again. So we're not getting fortune cookies, it seems, this episode.
This is a movie.
Yeah, I hope they actually take it all together and cut it all together and release it like that on Disney Plus.
Should be a 100-minute movie, I would hope, by the end of this.
That would be cool. All right, we start off exactly where we left off, and Ahsoka is surrounded by Maul's Mandos, as you call them, Robin.
I call it standoff, scene one.
Yep. And she's very determined, and she manages to tricksily press her, you know, locator to Rex. And Rex is like, she's this way.
I don't think that Maul wanted her dead.
No.
So I think he was happy to get away from that with nobody, with losing only one Mando in this, and let her get away. His motivation there was, oh, I need to go think and ruminate and figure out who this Ahsoka Tano, isn't
it? Tano, isn't it?
And get more info on her so I can see how I can put this together and how my plans can go further with this impasse of no Kenobi.
Yeah, no, it was really interesting. It was, you know, there were several versions of the you're nobody speech in this, in that, like, I don't know who you are. You're not really a name I've bothered to even know who you are, except for in your relation to Skywalker and Kenobi. Rex, of course, comes in for the rescue, and then Maul runs, which I have to point out, there's this comment in Rebels, which we haven't gotten to yet, where Maul and Ahsoka meet up in Malachor, and he's like, running again, Lady Tano? And it's like, he's the one who's been running this whole episode, like, everywhere. Mm-hmm. He runs away and he regroups and comes up with the new plan. So it's like, will we get to that moment? And then in Rebels, like, just as a reminder, they share a very awkward, we don't see it, it's off screen, elevator ride.
Kiss, yes. I mean, what, yes.
Robin rolled her eyes and sighed at her father. It was really funny. All right. What did you think of this, Robs?
Maul is a sassy boy.
He is, yes.
We have many mutual friends. I'm like, bruh.
You all missed it, but Robin did this, like, very evocative hand wave for, like, the many friends part, and I actually then had to picture Maul saying it like that. And now the world is cracked and broken.
Mean girl Maul.
So he escapes. He is the monster in the tunnels, in a way, as he heads off. And there is an attack on the city as they try to first they go and try to speak with...
Scene two, required hollow table conversation.
Oh, yes, sorry. Yes. Scene two, this scene itself orients you with where you are in Revenge of the Sith.
Super important. Super important scene, because... Obi-Wan Kenobi says something really, really important here.
Yes. So there's a couple of things. First, they talk about what happened in the cruiser above Coruscant with Dooku being killed. Do you remember that from Revenge of the Sith?
Yeah. Yeah. Dooku's dead. Nobody likes him anyways.
Some people like him.
It's a terrible death.
Yeah. He gets killed. He knows he's already gotten his mission to go to Utapau. He's literally about to leave. So we know exactly when this is a timestamp of when it's happening.
I got a real feeling from just a few simple words when Obi-Wan says Anakin killed him. I was like, he's a Jedi, but he sure isn't happy about that.
Yeah.
He's like, what have you done?
Yeah, yeah, because he was totally passed out at the time and only woke up, like, afterwards and had to basically, like, go through the, I don't know, the Jedi police report, basically, and be like, wait, this is what Anakin submitted? This is just crayon.
His lightsabers and took his head off?
I mean, did he describe it that way? We don't know.
Oh, come on, it's Anakin.
Oh, yeah, no, he totally did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Glorious death.
And, like, I don't know.
Over-exaggerated stuffs.
Yes.
Yes. That scene is described very well in the book.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
It's fascinating. And he's been, you know, given his mission to go to Utapau, and this is the you know, Anakin has been put on the council already, and Anakin is spying on the Chancellor, and they've already had their Darth Plagueis the Wise conversation. Like, it's deep into Revenge of the Sith.
Midichlorians.
Mini-chlorians? Midi-chlorians.
Mini. They're mini.
They are mini,
they
yes.
They are true. Mini midi-chlorians.
Yes. And we now know that there's an attack that is, they're looking for more information, and so they go and speak with the Prime Minister, but not before.
Obi-Wan says, the council isn't always right.
Ahsoka.
Which is... Wow, that's huge for Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm. He's throwing shade.
Well, no, because he's always believed in the Jedi, and even, like, really defended the council's actions and what they've had to do over the course of the war. And I think that the war has really worn on him.
It's interesting to point out, though, Obi-Wan Kenobi had for a master Qui-Gon Jinn,
who yes.
constantly argued and constantly disregarded the commands and the wisdom of the council for mm-hmm. his own council. Well, they're not the ones living in this moment. Even if the council will object to it, this is the right path before us. And Obi-Wan would be like, but master, that's not the way. The council will have things to say about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Qui-Gon would just do his own thing.
Because Qui-Gon be doing Qui-Gon.
He's Liam Neeson. He has a certain set of skills, a special set of skills.
Yes.
As a Jedi, even.
Yeah. Well, and like Qui-Gon was very present in listening to the Force, and both Master and Apprentice and Dooku Jedi Lost from canon books contribute to this a lot with understanding the difference between with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and how their realities are very different.
Yes.
So they go and speak with, well, so there's this moment where Ahsoka completely understands that asking Anakin to spy on one of his oldest friends would be a betrayal to Anakin, and she's shocked at these actions and that Obi-Wan seems to have been behind, or at least okay with it. Yeah, privy okay with it. And the thing that's really interesting is that Anakin is the blind spot for so many Jedi.
Yep.
Because he was like a perfect Jedi in many people's minds, even though he was unconventional and did things kind of his own way. He,
well, I mean, they've met Qui-Gon. Like,
yeah.
Qui-Gon's always right.
Well, and Anakin also had, you know, everything he did worked out, with the exception of Dooku cutting off his hand. Like, yep. That was the thing that he was like, oh, but that's the thing that I did wrong. And then from then on, he, you know, crashing ships, people dying, but he was always okay.
Yeah.
It leads to a lot of hubris.
So much so that he was willing to go up against Obi-Wan when Obi-Wan had the high ground.
I know.
In the same way that Darth Maul tried to, wait, no, that's not. Obi-Wan, how did you learn these things?
Obi-Wan learned.
So we're moved to scene 3.
What?
Yeah.
Now I didn't get to say one thing.
What did you want to say?
Glitchy mom talk. Talk to your father about politics.
Which was what?
That was literally just my notes right there.
For the scene at the holo table?
Yeah. When they're talking.
You were like, what is going on? The politics here? I better talk to mom about it?
No. Glitchy mom talk, because we always refer to Kenobi as mom.
Right.
So, and then talk to your father as, like, talk to Anakin about politics. And I'm just like...
That's really funny.
That was really confusing, but really funny.
In my mind, they're the parents of Ahsoka.
I recall hearing you laugh and cackle and shout things out while you were watching the episode upstairs. It was that good?
Yeah. Well, that's basically all I do every time I watch anything.
Okay, so I have a question for you. Who is Jesse?
I don't know.
You don't know who Jesse is either. I also could not have picked out Jesse in a lineup.
I know ever. Who Jesse is.
Well, we all know that you know who Jesse is. But they have referred to Jesse over the last 7 seasons. Jesse and Kix. Kix and Jesse. The other 2 named guys in the entire the entire 501st.
Yes.
And they're Rex's right and left hand, kinda.
Kinda,
but
yeah.
I'd never really known who they were.
Yeah.
And I was like,
they have solo episodes.
Yeah. And yeah. Kix has a big moment previous in this season of Bad Match where he kind of takes mm-hmm. Cody away. Jesse's still there. Jesse's had nothing to do. And even if you've said Jesse's had his own episodes and whatnot, he hasn't really.
I mean, it was Jesse and Kix
exactly.
together. Yeah, it's always Jesse and Kix, Kix and Jesse.
And now I finally realize why Jesse's been there the whole time and why he's a named character. It's for this moment.
So that he can spill his guts. And so I messaged my cousin, who's like the biggest Clone Wars clone stan. Like, she knows all about all of the clones, like their personalities, what they're known for, everything. And I was like, so what would Jesse, under the, you know, influence of the Force, tell Maul? Like, what would Jesse say? And she said, she is a trusted commander who would give her life for them. Mm-hmm. And so that has earned their loyalty. She was raised basically by Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Mom and dad.
And she left the Jedi Order under, because Jesse was very always straight, bullshit circumstances. Mm-hmm. That's exactly like what she framed. And I agree. Like, you know, the clones respect the Jedi, but they would hold Ahsoka above the Jedi.
We also got another clone trooper's name here, Sterling, which we've never heard before. Oh. And I was like, I want to know more about that guy. He's got a cool name.
Oh my gosh, Jesse, no, we barely knew ye.
Yeah, I know. And then I kept, like, because you watched that whole thing, I kept going, it's Jesse. Like, and the song would go through the opening like, Disney show.
Like the Disney show, yeah.
I'm like, is that clone trooper Jesse? Is he also a nanny? Like,
yeah. It's really interesting because he's got the Imperial, like, Starburst or whatever on his face, tattooed on his face. It's also on his helmet, but he probably has an Ahsoka helmet now.
He's styling.
Yeah. So you think he's dead?
No. Jesse?
Yeah.
No, Jesse's alive.
Okay.
Yeah, no, Jesse, like the clips are undone and he's sent back to them later on.
Right.
Yeah.
But I wrote that before we got to that part.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, Jesse, we barely knew ye.
Right. No, that was really clearly articulated, like, oh my God, that he's going to pull that information or kill him. He doesn't care which. He cares more about the information. But then he is very clear in releasing Jesse and sending him back because he's like, I got what I needed out of him.
Yeah.
I'm not a bad guy. Do you think he would be able to have swayed Ahsoka over to his side when he's like, here's your dead friend?
Probably not.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. No, and that's Mulda's selfless things for selfish reasons.
Yes.
Yes.
And so we get in this scene, and this is scene four. They're in the tunnel. Jesse's been captured. Maul is extracting in the information from him, and we see Gar Saxon and Root there.
And the framing of it is very much exactly like the scene where in The Force Awakens, Kylo is using the same mind force information pull technique on Oscar Isaac's character Poe, right? And it, actually the scene where, like, you can see the dark side user through the hand, it's almost exactly the same. This very much homage to the sequel trilogy a lot in this episode.
I missed everything in that scene. I've watched the episode three times, and I cannot get over the fact that Maul has an earring in the upper part of his left ear. And I was like, huh, I have never seen that before. That's a strange affectation for Maul to have. Where was he when he got that piercing? Was the lady like, we're not supposed to pierce the cartilage at Claire's? And then he was like, do it anyway. That Kenobi will hate it. Like, just
so
could not get over Maul's ear piercing.
Apparently he has it in The Phantom Menace. Ray Park does, because Ray Park has it.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so they're just, I don't know that they've shown it so much in the cartoons, but they made sure he had it throughout these episodes.
He got a piercing underage without parental guidance or supervision. Like, who was piercing this guy's ear? I hope he did it himself now. These are the questions I need answered.
I already asked Katie Poha Dameron about it, who's the biggest mall stan on the internet, and she said, oh, he's got it because Ray Park has it.
You already had the, you noticed the eye, the, you noticed the earring as well?
Yes.
Really? It was very predominant.
Well, and I noticed it in the throne room.
I didn't notice it.
When he's in the throne room and looking out the window, and there's a zoom in on his face, on his ear. So
yeah. It's a black earring on ear.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. It's like a little bump. Yeah.
I didn't care about his earring as much as you guys did. All I was like, he's got pretty eyes.
Oh. You liked his eyes?
And then there was like the mind control thing, and I was like, and then I put a side note, random purple haired chick.
Yeah. So that's a Rook. So no. And she's actually voiced by Vanessa Marshall, who did Hera.
Yes.
Yeah.
You talked about this last.
Yeah.
Episode.
But she's there. Yes. Yes.
And I that smooth that transition was smooth AF. this with the scream and like the putting on the helmet. I loved that transition so
as Gar Saxon walks off with his helmet lit up. I was like, this is it for Gar Saxon. This is the end for Gar Saxon.
Yeah.
Is totally what I thought. Like, he put the helmet on and then the big escapes. This scene coming up is just amazing. But I would like to first talk about the hair dye job of Prime Minister Almec, because that man has so many colors in his hair. There is 7 different colors in his silver hair. I was just blown away.
That's awesome.
Blue, orange, brown, red, green, white, silver.
The prisons themselves are quite colorful.
Yeah.
So it could be reflection or something.
No, it's his hair. Literally, I paused it and counted because it was just so
amazing. The animation.
Who cares about death count? It's time for hair color.
Hair color count. So they go and they want to know exactly.
They want to know who Maul's been sitting with at lunch.
I mean, basically,
he's not in the cafeteria. Where is he?
Well, they want to know what he's all about and what he's, you know, been talking to the Prime Minister, who is one of his, you know, allies.
Prime Minister.
Right? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, no, they want to know. Well, more like, so when he muses after he's had a nightmare, what does he rant into the darkness? That's what they want to know.
Yes. Dread. Maul's dread is what Almec called it.
What is he afraid of?
He had a vision.
Yes. Oh.
Cool.
What did you think of this?
I was like, so I've played a lot of Star Wars West End games where there was the 3 different Star Wars points. And I was like, man, Maul spent a lot of points on sense. He's always feeling the will of the Force, and he knows where the Force is going. He knows that the dark side is ascendant right now. Mm-hmm. He knows that it is at its highest peak.
Yeah. But he also knew the plan, at least in part, right? Like, it's something we've always like wondered as fans, like, how much did Maul know that he is able to prepare for the fall of the Republic? But now we know he knew enough, and he was able to guess a lot of the rest, enough to know that like it's coming to an end.
He saw it all coming, and he knew that he needed help. He can't do it alone. There's no way he can make the changes and get the things that he needed in place
in order to
survive it or not. He could probably survive it. I feel like he knew he could survive it, but in order to waylay it or put it in abeyance, stop it.
Yeah.
He needed the light side to side with him.
Yes. Yes. Which is, it's fascinating because it's like, we need a dark side user and a light side user to go and take out Sidious. That's interesting.
So interesting, isn't it?
From a union of sides to create balance perspective. Yeah.
Are you looking at me?
No, I was just asking what you thought.
Right now I'm thinking about how Maul is kind of like Kenobi's mistress in a way.
Yes, that's why he wants to take out Anakin, Obi-Wan's rightful, you know, the mom to his dad. So totally.
Yeah. But we find out that Maul has been having visions, and they have been of boom boom dead Prime Minister dying.
Poor
Anakin
Almec.
Skywalker.
How many people, their last words in Star Wars before they die are Skywalker?
Do you know the answer to this?
I do not, but I would love to know it. It's not a small number.
That's interesting. I know.
In the entirety of Star Wars ever.
Yep.
He will not be the next Skywalker. Yeah. I'm going to think about that a lot. Darn Skywalkers.
And then we get some cool Mandalorian chasing.
Yeah.
Oh. Perfectly timed deaths.
Okay.
Bang, bang. You're dead.
Bang, bang. You're dead.
Yeah. Mandalorians are very good at what they do, which is primarily killing.
He, like, shot him through the window. Almec is like, I can't tell you the rest.
Into the microphone.
I can't tell you the rest.
No. Nope.
Yeah.
Which is, like, as ham-fisted as you can get in plot mechanics.
Yes. It's as bad as I can't cry, so it's raining outside and it's reflecting off of me through a window.
Yep. I die before I tell you the important information just to prolong the movie. But that's okay, because we get a cool elevator shaft chase scene, and Bo-Katan, without even getting any lines, is freaking amazing.
Yeah. She just goes get him.
Kick ass fight scene.
Yeah.
Although there were people in those elevators, man.
There were. There were some clones, and they were like, whoa, what's going on with our elevator?
Rev.
Why is it slowing down? I could just imagine they were kind of just jumping a little bit, and then it stopped 2 feet early and the doors open. And they're like, this is strange, don't you think? Because that's how clones act.
Yeah.
And then Bo-Katan crawls up from underneath it, and they're like, hey. And she doesn't even turn around and acknowledge them. She's just like, I've got shit to do.
So lightsabers are often used as stopping mechanisms, like we saw last episode when Ahsoka landed and used her lightsabers to basically stop herself.
Right.
How much friction do lightsabers produce?
I don't think it's much.
No. You'd think that it would just be more like them cutting through butter. Everything is cutting through butter. Like,
it would really depend on the density of the object that you're cutting through as it parts, because how much those bonds... Well, that'd be very physics related, so...
Butter is, like, not easy to cut through when it's frozen, Mom. Just to clarify.
But when it's not, when it's soft.
But it's not easy to cut through when it's frozen.
It's a hot knife through butter, even frozen, it goes.
There's, like, it's the cliched expression, like a hot knife through butter. Like a lightsaber through anything.
Yeah. I'm really wondering how much friction lightsabers cause now.
Yeah. That's a fair question to ask, but it's
why
all...
Why am I here? What?
What do you mean?
You just guys were going to go into friction. I'm just like...
That's all I wanted to say.
Hey, look, you're going to learn all about this in high school science.
Yeah.
Don't roll your eyes. It's fun stuff.
Probably even sooner.
Let's hope.
Knowing the school system.
All right. Maul has a plan.
On to scene 7.
He's like, in the sewers? He's got a lot of charisma.
He does.
Yeah.
Pep talk them malls mandos.
First, we've got his meeting with the syndicate.
With another hollow meeting.
Yes. With the bad guys, in quotation marks. Because, I mean, really, they run drugs and they are all about crime. This is the underworld.
So we have Red Sun. We have the Pikes.
Yep.
And we have Dryden Voss.
Yep. Dryden Voss.
Dryden Voss from Solo. And I saw him and I was like, momentarily, is that Hux?
Oh, really?
Well, it kind of looks like him, from a distance, right? But you zoom in close and you can see the markings on his face.
I'm such a big Paul Bettany stan that as soon as I saw him, I'm like, oh my God, it's a Rickley, look.
Yes.
Look, it's that guy from Solo.
And I'm like, Dryden Voss? And you're like, yes.
Yeah, Paul Bettany.
From the only movie that I care about.
You love Solo so much.
I'm an advocate for Solo. When I heard that it didn't do well in box office, I was like...
I hope they make a show.
You were like what?
I was like sad. Very sad.
Okay. Yeah.
I will avenge you, Solo.
So he is basically giving them the, you know, fortify, protect yourself, go underground.
Go into hiding.
Go into hiding. We will survive this. And then he gives the pep talk to his Maul's Mandos.
Yes. First he says... Dooku was an old fool, but we were the same. The dark side has never been stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Oh, Maul, you're so full of little things that make me I want to know more. How do you know this? What have these visions revealed to you? Can I see one of your visions, please?
What's it like inside of Maul's head?
Yeesh, Dad, you're like one of his Mandos.
See, I'd be Maul. I would be one of Maul's Mandos, for sure.
Except that he sacrifices all of them so that he can get away.
Well, he's like, I don't care about this anymore.
Yeah. It's like, so it's been good. I gotta go. You guys all die for me. Cool.
You die or do whatever you need to do to get your part done. I'm not going to come and reinforce you because my whole reason for being here, which I very clearly told all of you, was to lure Kenobi and
Anakin Skywalker here.
And then I would kill Anakin Skywalker and hopefully Kenobi and everything would be great. But that didn't happen. my backup plan, you know, convert this other light side person to my side, didn't happen. So peace out. But just so you know, I did exactly the things that you needed in order for you to continue to maintain control of your city and your world, and you failed. So yeah, sucks to be you.
It's all your fault.
Yep. I'm a senior. Y'all are juniors. I'm going to go now.
But it's clear that he understands Mandalorian culture very well.
Oh, yes. And plays into their desires for glory and honor and all of that. There's a little bit of a quiet and Eleven is speaking with Maul.
Yeah. Do you want to explain the reference?
Sorry. It's a meme-ish thing. Where it's like, be quiet, a 10 is speaking, like I'm a 10 and you guys are all sevens, attractiveness or personality wise. And like Maul is just way up there from a being able to charismatically convince people to do things his way.
Hey, at least he isn't boring.
It's true.
Also, every time I see a clone now, I'm just like, no Rex.
Yeah, because there's a bunch of other clones that now have the shoulder pad because they're captains.
Yeah.
And we see other captains and I'm like, no Rex. Oh, phew. Not Rex.
Not Rex.
But don't worry, Robin. Can't be Rex.
I know, right?
He's fine. So he's hanging out in the throne room. They find out where he is.
Yes, but just before that, we get a really cool piece where the people on the streets are being herded away for own protection, and the clones are doing it, and all the people are mad at them, and the clones are telling people what to do, and the people aren't liking it, which is
very
basically
Empire.
Foreshadowing of everything that is to come immediately after this.
Yes, and also potentially what ends up happening to Mandalore, you know, before the Mandalorian happens. In that period of time, there's going to be a purge of Mandalore.
Yep. Because they are not going to peaceably accept the Empire's rule.
Mm-hmm.
Mandos are like so angsty all the time, though.
Yep. And so Maul has run away, but now he's learned all of the information that he needed to learn. So he's like, where is the most theatrical place I can be?
Darksiders really like to make, you know, a scene. Yep. And so he has to dim the lights. Make sure, like, he's got the best, you know.
Scented candles.
Richard III pose on the throne. He possibly can, sitting hunched, one leg up.
Although he has to make himself, like, he has to make capturing him super easy.
Like, they think it's easy, but, you know, it's Maul. And I like how everybody enters. They realize, hey, there's an attack going on. And everyone's like, all right, force users, the demigods are dealing with each other now. Like, I mean, really, they're like, you know, living force gods. They have the ability to wield these cosmic powers. And it's like, what can anyone else do? You know? And so Ahsoka and Maul are like, all right, kids, clear the room. The adults got to talk.
Although,
first we get Bo-Katan. In this typical Bo-Katan style, like, I'll solve the problem.
Yeah.
Han Solo-esque.
See the
bad guy? Shoot.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like how
there's a laser bolt thing, yeah.
He bends them.
He bends it. And again, that's TFA, like, with
stopping
Kylo
it, yeah.
Stopping the laser bolt. So we're kind of seeing these force powers that were accentuated in the sequel trilogy.
They existed before Kylo did them.
He bends two to the left, bends two to the right, and then tells Bo-Katan to sit down.
Yep.
Throws her almost out of the room.
And we have this amazing, you know, scene, the throne room scene, as people are calling it, between Maul and Ahsoka.
Yep.
And it's lit beautifully with the background of the stained glass windows in the throne room.
Holy crap, it's raining explosions.
Well, yeah, Maul returns Jesse and they get to lead him away, and he's actually can speak, and he apologizes for what he did, but he had no choice to do it. And then we get a Wilhelm cry, which is
off with the Mandos attacking, and they're like, oh, we need to go and reinforce
which is just great because there hasn't been any for a while, and it's so nice to hear good old Wilhelm cry. And then we come back.
Yeah,
so I always felt like that was not even a new scene. We're still back.
It's
here.
Just establishing what's going on, like off to the left, right? And in this throne room, I do want to express that This is literally where Satine was murdered by Maul.
Yes.
In front of Kenobi.
Yes.
So this throne room has some history.
This is where Almec was captured.
Yep. Almec was captured. There was, you know...
This is where the Mandalorian was conceived.
Well, wow. I mean...
No, he's an adopted son into Mandalorian culture.
Yeah. Well, Jon Favreau was playing...
Hey, thanks for spoilers.
Sorry.
I haven't seen
Mandalorian.
Because I fall asleep every time I watch it.
Right. But Jon Favreau was playing Pre Vizsla.
Pre Vizsla, who was like in charge before Mando or before Maul came to, you know, he was the bad guy before Maul came.
He was the head of Death Watch.
Death Watch, yeah. And then
I'm glad Death Watch sounds is gone. Like a... Because in this time of coronavirus, it's such a terrible word now. I'm like, whew. That's all over. Let's continue on.
Dad, Death Watch kind of sounds like one of those like horrible, like you know the horror movie trailers that you see about like the app on your phone that tells you how long you have to live? And
Death Apple Watch.
Death Watch.
Death Apple Watch app. Don't download this app. It will kill you.
It's the Justin Timberlake movie where your watch tells you how much longer you have to live.
Oh, yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. Because Ahsoka's like, I need to bring you to justice.
Just us, he says.
And he says, justice. These are just tools for greater powers. Justice is merely the construct of the current power base.
I'm offended. You stole my quote.
Did I? Is that one of your quotes?
Yes.
You say it.
Justice is merely a construct of the current power base.
Very good.
Angsty.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not.
People have been... using him in these scenes and saying, why are you booing me? I'm right. With the meme. Because he's right. That's the problem, is that he sees how this is all interconnected and how, you know, it's just a matter of time until a different rule system is in place. And will that rule system be more just? No.
Well, you can't take me in for justice because the Jedi Order and the Council will already have fallen. And then who are you really taking me in to? The people you report to won't even be there.
Yes, exactly. Also, and the bad guys will probably kill us both.
Yeah.
What are your options? Yeah.
She doesn't know it yet.
I love the philosophical, ethical questions that are being raised by the darkest person in the room.
Can we just have Maul to go to the doctor and get him prescribed for some chill pills? Because he really needs them. Because he's just anxiously rambling the entire time.
He has had a vision of the future, which is to come. And it has come true. So I don't know. I think everybody else
needs... But he does need chill pills.
So you know how we talk about it in Dungeons & Dragons all the time? About the selfish and unselfish people.
Yeah.
Right?
Just last episode.
And you can see Maul has a very clear, logical argument. Right? He is saying these things are going to happen and we need to stop it. And that seems like it's a very good thing. But at the same time, it's not a good thing because Maul is acting from a selfish standpoint and Ahsoka doesn't act from selfishness. She acts from an unselfish perspective, right? Maul's goal at the end of this is to just come out however higher he can be in the pecking order. If he comes out on top, that's great. He'll rule as he sees fit. And since he's smart and powerful, it is his will to rule, he can do so. But Ahsoka sees through all of that. So even though everything he says is perfectly logical and makes a great deal of sense, and she should side with him, she can't. And no one can ever side with Maul because he's selfish.
Yep. But
those Mandos learn firsthand.
The thing about the dark side is that it's this weird catch-22 maze, is that you are stuck in it and you are lonely. You want to have companionship. You always want to have somebody that, you know, understands you and is with you in that. But it ends up destroying that other person.
And it ends up destroying that relationship.
And destroying that relationship because you can't live in that. But it doesn't mean that you don't yearn for companionship. Companionship and compassion for other people and empathizing with other people is the light. That is the selflessness aspect. And so what I find super ironic about all of these dark side users, even Chief Palpatine always looking for an apprentice to join him in the dark side, is that all they want is what they cannot have is the light.
Yeah.
And they try to make it their version of it and it never works because the truth is everybody exists somewhere in the middle of the light and the dark and selflessness and selfishness. You can never be fully selfless and you can never be fully selfless because you will always desire to have connections and support and things like that that you can only get from the other side. And so the truth is you ride somewhere in the middle, which is yourself. And you have to try to, you know, in a good person, be a good person is leaning towards that selflessness part. You can never get over the fact that you're going to have selfish moments, even if you're leaning in towards being selfless. Rant over.
And so, Maul, well, I look at it this way. The light shines upon an object and casts the shadow where the light hits the object. And if you're facing towards the light, you do not see the shadow you cast behind you. Mm-hmm. But if you're turned away from the light, all you will see is the shadow you cast. Mm-hmm. So dark side users are always pointed at the shadow they are casting. And light side users are always pointed towards the light and do not see the shadow they cast. It's interesting and very important to note. Maul holds his hand out to Ahsoka Tano to make the physical gesture of join me and together we can defeat Sidious. Every choice you've made has led you to this moment. And I would really like to bring that back in a moment, but he still holds his hand there as the war outside shatters the glass windows of the throne room.
Glass explosion is beautiful.
Throwing sound, darkness, and the world into this private moment to show that what they are doing here is relevant and matters. And he doesn't lower his hand through all of that. He stands there letting the world happen around them, hoping this person will finally believe him.
Yes. And understand him too. I think that that's really key. dark side users always be proposing.
Yeah.
It's now no longer just the Skywalkers. That bloodline, it's really, they don't want to be alone.
Well, even Sidious.
Yeah, even Sidious, you know.
Together. Even Dooku.
Yeah. Dooku to Kenobi.
Dooku to Asajj.
Dooku to Asajj, yeah. They just don't want to be alone. And that, to me, makes me pity them.
Right. And then we see even better with Maul and his brother.
Yeah.
And just how the dark side corrupts relationships too, because they're constantly reaching out, but then they're constantly putting the selfish upon the person that they're entering into a relationship with. It's the same thing between Anakin and Padme. Mm-hmm. Like, you cannot have this relationship exist in this because you'll start to suspect the selfishness of the person that you're cohabitating with or whatnot, that you will not expect their action to have been selfless. You'll have seen selfish motivations behind it. So she says yes.
Yep. Yes. But what did you think of this proposal scene, Robin?
I don't have any notes on it.
That's okay. Oh,
this wasn't the important part for you? Or you were just too engrossed in the show at that point to take a note?
The pretty explosion. But she did say yes, but.
She said yes, which was like, I understand the but the yes came and there was a pause.
Yeah.
And she's like, I just have one question for you.
Yeah.
She's just very good at improv, Dad.
Fair.
Yes. No, but I think she saw that this was maybe the only way that they could deal with Sidious. She was convinced that, you know, Maul at least had some intentions of trying to solve this problem. And then what do you want with Anakin Skywalker?
He has the key to everything. He's been groomed for his role as my master's new apprentice. I orchestrated this entire war to lure him here with Kenobi to kill him.
Robin, if somebody was like, hey, go and kill, I'm going to kill your dad because Anakin's your dad. What would you say?
No, thanks. We're not sided anymore. I take back my yes.
He's evil now. You don't understand. He has been tempted and groomed for a very long time by the most evil person in and intellectual person in the entire galaxy.
Yep.
Who is somehow alive in the last movie. Why, Tross? Sorry.
For his last, for since he was 9 until he's like 29?
He's, what, 20, 22, 23.
Oh, it hasn't been that long? It's only been like 14 years? Oh, okay.
Because it was 10 years. He was 19 in Attack of the Clones.
Yep.
And then the Clone Wars is somewhere between 3 and 4 years.
So when Revenge of the Sith kicks off, it's only mm-hmm. been 4 years. Huh, mm-hmm. He's only 23. So more than half of his life, he has been manipulated by Sheev Palpatine. I can't even imagine.
Yep.
The subtle infestation of his own logical being. That has led to this.
Every dark side user deserves pity. Because, like...
I don't know about Dooku.
Have you listened to the book?
Yeah, but dude turned really old. He just kind of was like, I'm fed up with this. And like, it was like a middle-age crisis for him or something.
little bit. He had no choice but to try to save his world, and he leaned into the dark side to do it.
Totally. Mm-hmm. He bought a cherry red lightsaber sports car and decided to go whole hog.
He had to probably, kill a giant world dragon. That's what happens.
He grew out a ponytail and also got an earring. Like,
all right. So she's like, yeah, but, and then no, Anakin is everybody's blind spot. Again, she can't even imagine that he would ever go and fall. And
kill a whole bunch of younglings.
All of this makes, like, the Rebels scene when they meet back up, like, even more poignant. Like, I love the iterative storytelling of Star Wars because it, like, adds to the layers of everything. And then they fight. And this fight, Robin, what did you think of the fight? The animation, etc.
Lightsaber looking fab as Maul pulls out the, I only really know it as the one from Rebels with the Inquisitors. They always have this lightsaber. Like,
double-bladed, yeah.
Yeesh, be original, guys.
No, he was the original. He's the OG double lightsaber dude.
Yep.
One half of it is from some concept art of Asajj Ventress's own lightsaber that she carries around with her. So did he steal that?
I don't know. Some of it even looked like right out of Rey's staff.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely some interesting
stuff.
Look, let's be honest. Lightsabers, like Harry Potter wands, they're all pretty much sticks. And there's only so much you can do with sticks.
Yes. But anyways, he looks good. And what they did was they took Ray Park, who played Maul in the movies, and actually did like some motion capture for him as he fought Ahsoka. They also did some motion capture
right.
for her.
Lauren too. Mary Kim,
yeah,
who does like a billion stunts as a stunt performer and stunt double, which I didn't realize that IMDb separates those two things as though they're which are super relevant. So a stunt person is just a person who does a pratfall or something. You can see their face, and a stunt double is replacing somebody
in costume and everything.
In costume with the wig, and usually in such a way that, and they have to work in such a way that you can't tell that it's not the actor.
And Ray Park does a double jump.
Yes.
In this scene. And I was like, that actually happened. That's, he actually is physically capable of double jumping, which is like you jump up in the air and you kick yourself, you yeet yourself forward enough that you can jump again. Isn't that cool?
Mama tucks with her hands.
Yes, she does. She swung them all over the place for that.
I'm very animated right now. It's exciting. And
so, you know, was Ray Park and Lauren Mary Kim in this scene.
Yes.
I could find no evidence in Clone Wars or in any of the other animated productions where they did fight performance or they mo-capped people.
This is the first time.
This. And I have to say, my hat's off. This was impressive. It was so much more detailed a fight than any of the others.
Like, there's little moments with, like, especially Maul's legs that feel like Ray Park.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Like, and I've seen him at cons doing his lightsaber swinging. Like, it felt physically just like he was in that character. They just did a fabulous job.
It was breathtaking, really, is what it was, this fight. And so there's something that you and other people pointed out that happens at the very beginning of this when Maul turns on his lightsaber and charges forward.
There's a scream. It's weird. It's not a cool, like a normal scream. And people are comparing it exactly to where in Revenge of the Sith, when Mace and the other Jedi are trying to attempting to arrest Chief Palpatine in his office, he jumps over his desk and there's a scream at the same moment.
Yeah.
Mace fell out the window.
I don't think that the timing exactly syncs up. But to me, what ends up happening a lot in Star Wars is the music and the sound design kind of reflect things in the Force. And sometimes it's not always in alignment. Sometimes it's just emotions. And what I think this is saying with the use of that kind of scream is to say it's all inevitable now. There's really nothing we can do. The fighting will happen no matter what.
Yeah, because I watched that scene afterwards. I watched that scene, and then I watched the Mace Windu scene where Sidious pulls out his red lightsaber, lights it up, and charges. And there's that sound.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even sound like it's coming from Sidious. It doesn't even sound like it's coming from
Palpatine.
No, it's
just like the Force.
It doesn't sound like it's coming from Maul.
No.
And now I want to think, what other times has a red lightsaber been activated and somebody charged forward? Has this been played? Because I think it's probably a key for us to say, oh, there's anger. Oh, yeah. There's intention. This is not somebody defending themselves. This is a person aggressively attacking. And I will say this, after having watched Darth Sidious fight Mace Windu and then watched Maul fight Ahsoka Tano, I'll take Ahsoka Tano fighting Maul any day of the week, because that fight between those two old men is just terrible.
It's like cringy.
Those other, like, he literally just goes, stab, one Jedi dead. Stab, one Jedi dead. They just like, hur! And they fall over. And it's so bad in comparison to what we get in this glorious fight between Ahsoka Tano and Maul.
Rip, Mace fell out the window.
I do want to just have a quick comment on the sound design in general. Anytime Maul is kind of like in his little mode, we hear the sound, like the Sithy.
The Night Sisters style sound too.
It's primarily used for him. It's used all throughout Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Whenever he's like doing something, you hear the Sithy sound. We get some amazing plays of different types of especially drums. We get a lot of drums and a lot of choral for Maul.
That's like, I looked over to you and said at that one point too, like, he always gets the voices. He gets the choral stuff. Nobody ever sings when other people are fighting.
So choral is represented, especially in Greek tragedy, as, you know, the chorus is reflecting the emotions of the tragic hero, and Maul is getting a tragic hero play. It's interesting. So they fight. It's really cool.
He
overextends himself and gets pushed out the window.
Yes. That kick through the window.
But
yep.
Okay. I have to say, Maul is cheating. He used his elbow. That's illegal.
Okay.
Elbows.
That happens all the time. Somebody cheats in every lightsaber battle with an elbow or a knee.
A knee.
It's not fair.
A kick.
Or a telekinetic pull of a heavy steel object.
Ahsoka lost her lightsaber at one point, managed to get it back with the Force, continuing the fight. And he runs away.
Yes.
After being pushed.
Well, he doesn't run away.
He gets pushed and then he runs away. He's like, oh, wait. Nope. Time to leave.
Well, he gets kicked right through the window. It doesn't come back.
But then he runs away. He's like, I'm not going to fight
anymore. I'm not coming back. I got kicked through a window.
So, Ahsoka has this cool moment when she goes out and she senses him, like, you know, stage right, and goes and like looks, and oh, there he is climbing up the thing, and we enter the coolest moment in like the coolest scene setting, which is this, like, because it's a giant domed city,
right?
We have this lattice structure, this
the girders,
all
those I-beams,
but it's totally a spider's web. And the spider motif is a symbol for Sidious's power and control. We see it behind him in the Empire throne, kind of. It's a subtle symbol that is used throughout Star Wars to represent that Sidious is basically, you're in his web and you can't get out either way. And there's so many cool little moments to do with this fight scene. I hope we have the time to kind of go through them.
Yes. First, a whole bunch of Mandalorians and clone troopers die.
Do we want to do the Clone Wars?
So maybe it's a good point to bring in the death count.
Okay.
Say thing. I forgot.
We're going to go into the final fight. Did you want to say one more thing?
I had like three things to say.
Okay.
Oh, you've got Kenobi's arrogance.
Oh, yes.
What arrogance, man? What?
He's very self-assured.
Okay.
He's attended self-assurance training. Yeah.
And then he gets yeeted out the window.
Yeah.
Covered. Boogie. And then like the fab triumph music plays. And like you know that there's like 10 minutes left in the episode. But that triumph music, you already know, they gonna capture Maul. It'll happen.
Yeah. Ahsoka and Maul are walking into the spider's webs, and we have our Mandos and our clones fighting below.
I will say this. There has been a lot of already dead people in this episode.
Yes.
But the people we see die on screen. Did more clone troopers die or more Mandalorians die? Robin, which do you think?
Mandos.
Think it's going to be clones, but I want to get into the Clone Wars. I got to do the thing. Now it's time for the Clone Wars death count. Clone Wars death count. And now over to Kyle for the Clone Wars death count.
Yes, thanks, Bob. I'm standing here on scene. It's been a day of devastation and destruction here on Mandalore. I can confirm and report, though, the clone troopers are definitely winning this war with only 12 confirmed kills on screen today. They far outstrip the 29 Mandalorians that died on screen today. I would like to just point out, Bob, that I think it was Sterling that got killed and then crushed by his own walker, which was probably one of the most heart-wrenching things to see in this entire scene so far on the Clone Wars.
Appreciate the announcer.
So there's no droids. It's just clones and Mandos.
Zero droids killed in this episode.
No force users, because that's coming in the next few episodes.
A very simple death count today.
That's good. Thank you for that, Kyle.
And now back to our regularly scheduled chit chat.
So they end up showing up in the spider web. He is heading up there because he has a ship ready for him to take him away. And Ahsoka and him do the balance beam fight.
Yes.
It's a tightrope.
Yeah, it is.
They're walking on a tightrope. Maul is walking on a tightrope.
Yes. It very much looks like that. They're both, you know, struggling with their balance. I think they filmed it like this in the rotocap. Like they actually had them on a balance beam so that they could actually get the feel. Because you have these like little moments of foot slips that are very realistic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then they have this amazing conversation.
I don't know if it was as good as the conversation in the throne room, but it was still really good.
Yes. And we have this fight where like Ahsoka ends up like stepping on his leg at one point and like coming down with some slashes. Like it's intense and amazing. And my favorite moment is, okay, so they're fighting and they're getting things and he strips her of her weapons. And the most amazing thing is that Ahsoka manages to beat him without a lightsaber.
Yes.
And I think that says so much about her, that you don't need weapons if the Force is with you and you are able to.
Girl, you just drop a gift from your father, though. Like, just drop it on the ground. Never gonna find it again. Just drop it.
She might get them back. The clones are down below.
He stripped her weapons from her. Also, because it's very clear, his intention is never to kill her.
No.
He doesn't want her to die. He wants her to join him, and he cannot find a way because she keeps fighting him. He takes her weapons from her. He's like, finally, I've got you. She's like, no, you don't. And then he says, because he's thrown into the air and he's like, okay, good. It's all over. Phew.
Kill me.
I've fallen before. So just, oh, wait, what? No, let me go. Let me die. We're all going to die. You don't know what you're doing.
Yes, it was intense. And like people, like he is willing to die rather than have to live through what is going to happen. And like people just need to listen to Maul apparently and like listen to him with, you know, heart open, give him a hug, give him a Snickers, give him a warm blanket. Things would have been better.
I agree. But
give
very
him
important
tissues
point.
And watch zombie movies.
Gar Saxon is still alive.
He is.
He is literally led off in cuffs. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was Rook in the helicopter above that was there to rescue him. But we don't see Rook, and I assume that she also is still alive.
It sounded a little bit like Vanessa Marshall, but not quite. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was actually Bonnie Wilde, who was another audio engineer in Lucas, in the grouping there with Accord. And
we are left off with Maul captured into the next episode.
But lightsabers where?
I know.
Where are the lightsabers? Where they go?
Exactly.
They fell like a kilometer.
I know. We'll see. I mean, in the Ahsoka novel, there's this scene where she buries them. So maybe the clones find them and give them back to her, much like Kenobi gets his lightsabers back that fell like a kilometer.
Right. I hope there's that moment where a clone trooper walks up and says, I found this. Hey, I found one too.
Yeah. And then, like, moments later, Order 66. Anyways.
Oh, my goodness.
So
what? No.
That's no, what we're coming 66. Into.
Order. I will not be here for them Order 66 episodes. Yeah, I do not want to struggle. No.
I want you to come back. No. All right. So production stuff.
Sure. Yes. Other than the Lauren Mary Kim and Ray Park fight performance, this is some extra interesting things. This episode was directed by Nathaniel Villanueva. And let's talk about the production team for this episode. We didn't get any new characters or anything else in this episode. It was all strictly characters we've already seen since last episode. So let's talk about our production team, which is our producer, our co-producer, and our associate producer, which are Carolyn Kermel, Carrie Beck, and Josh Rhimes.
Mm-hmm.
So the production staff, these three people, they are going to lead all of the production meetings. They're going to ensure that all of the different departments and different groups are in communication with each other and establishing their needs. They're going to create the timelines for each individual episode, and that'll lead to all the other pieces. But another one that's really important that a lot of people forget is they're also responsible for budget.
Oh my.
They're responsible for the allocation of all assets of the show, and whatever costs those are, they're responsible for making sure that it fits into the budget that they've proposed in order for the show to happen. So we start off with Carolyn Kermel. She's Carolyn Robinson Kermel. Carolyn Robinson Kermel, but Carolyn Kermel in this. She was the production manager through to the associate producer to the producer herself on Rebels. She's highlighted and showcased as day 498 of the women. She is day 498 of women in Star Wars. She has been with Lucasfilm for 4.5 years and came over from DreamWorks. And yeah, she has a really long, huge, wonderful LinkedIn profile where you can learn about the fact that she got a Bachelor of Science in Business with a focus in finance and has moved up very quickly over the course of her time with Rebels, from production manager to a producer to now being the key main producer for this. And I believe that whatever the next animated show for Star Wars is going to be, it will be with her in some producer capacity. Our co-producer is Carrie Beck. Carrie Beck has been with Lucasfilm for 8 years, mm-hmm. and she started with Lucasfilm as an executive assistant, but that might have been Caroline. So I apologize. I can only write so many notes in such a small space. But Carrie Beck's interesting. She is day 101 of Women of Star Wars. Thank you, Amy Rickow.
Yep.
Did you know that she is the creator of Rebels?
Yes, she has a creator title.
And she is the creator of Resistance.
Yes.
And is the creator for all 108 episodes of those two shows.
She is also one of the main producers behind Galaxy's Edge.
She is the co-producer of this season and has two Rebels-oriented Emmy nominations mm-hmm. as well. So she's pretty powerful. Her big thing, and I think that's the reason why she's a co-producer on this and why she has so much say in the story group, is that she's in animation, is that she sees in animation the opportunity to create bigger sets than you could possibly ever create in real life and tell longer stories than you could in a regular movie or normal sitcom or normal TV show setting. And it shows with the creation and the way that the first season of Resistance went and how long the Clone Wars went and how many different stories, different places, and different themes were explored in Clone Wars and then in Rebels as well. And the story she wanted to tell of Ezra Bridger over time and his growing up is powerful. So
yeah,
I'm really impressed.
There's a lot of emotion in her desires and what she has created too. And I appreciate that.
And she all got that by being hired at the start of episode 7 to do content strategy for episode 7 and sit in the group and talk about strategy for content.
That's awesome.
It's led to this crazy, amazing spinoff
career, yeah.
for Disney's Star Wars animation group, which is just
our favorite TV. It's growing because they've done, you know, Forces of Destiny, and they've done all of these little other projects as well. Galaxy of Heroes, where they've like offshoot to these different designers and different crews and different houses. And I'm just really excited to see where they go with Disney, with Lucasfilm animation.
And then Josh Rimes, who's been there for 4 years, got his start in the story group and did a lot of Star Wars Lego pieces, and then moved over into an associate producer role in season one of Resistance, was a co-producer in season two, and now he's the associate producer under Carrie and Caroline for this season of Clone Wars.
They make sure that the business works so that Filoni can do the creation.
Yes. So Filoni can have his space wolves.
Yeah. Space wolves and Ahsoka. All right. That was amazing. And we have our next episode coming up, episode 11. We only have two more left. The next episode will be called Shattered. After capturing Maul on Mandalore, Ahsoka's journey to the Jedi Council is disrupted when Order 66 is declared, turning her world upside down.
This is, we should get climax. We should get the main turn. This is the third act of a four-act play.
We're going to get Maul and Ahsoka working together.
I don't know if we'll get it right into this episode. I think we might get a twist and have more of something else happen.
We'll see.
Just to extend it so that they get that. If it does, it happens at the very end of this episode.
Yeah, when they start to work together. I think we're going to have a prison conversation through a force field where Maul is inside of a force field and Ahsoka is having a conversation, very Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs type situation. I think we'll have more conversations between the two of them. Robin, we would love to have you back, but we understand that this is going to be a hard next couple of episodes.
Me salty.
Robin, thank you for coming on the show and sharing your thoughts about this fight, especially. I know I heard the screaming of joy, so I'm very happy that you enjoyed it.
I'm not quiet.
No. And Kyle, thank you again for coming on the show.
Thank you for continuing to put up with me.
No. Where can people find you online?
Online, as you always slip in there so I can't say anything else. They can find me online on Twitter at TavernTalesDM.
Awesome. Thank you again.
Thank you for listening to What the Force. I'm Marie-Claire Gould, your host. Our music is orchestral music composed by Christy Carew for What the Force. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/whattheforce. We'd like to thank all our patrons, especially those who love and are obsessed with What the Force. Melody, Night Huntress, In Wild Space, Susan, Jessica, Brad, Anna Perez, Macau Mom, Neil, and James. Make sure you like and subscribe on your podcast app of choice or on YouTube. Leaving a 5-star review on iTunes helps other people find the show. You can can connect with us on Twitter at What the Force Show, What the Force Podcast on Facebook, or on our website, whattheforce.ca. We also have a new Discord. Links are available in the liner notes. Feel free to reach out and start a conversation. Cheers.